Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. The crowds of students and faculty opposing a sweeping and controversial higher education bill keep growing, swelling by the hundreds at Ohio University, Ohio State, and the University of Cincinnati. The bill would outlaw faculty strikes, ban diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and prohibit universities from taking a stand on controversial issues like climate policy, immigration, and abortion. It recently passed the Senate, and now it's in the Ohio House, where a Republican-led majority looks ready to approve it. Pranav Jani is president of Ohio State's chapter of the American Association of University Professors. He, along with other faculty and students, rallied in opposition of the bill last week, staging a protest that lasted several hours at the campus oval and numbering in the hundreds. He's also an Ohio State English professor with a focus on postcolonial studies and critical ethics studies. And he serves as program director of the Asian American Studies. Welcome to All Sides, Pranav.
Thank you so much, Amy. So glad to be here.
Well, you testified in opposition to this bill as a private citizen, and a copy of your testimony was printed at medium.com. The headline was, Senate Bill 1 proponents have no idea how I teach my class. And you've been lobbying against this bill. There was an earlier version about 2 years ago. You've been in this fight for a while.
That's right.
You've written that it will destroy the foundation of higher education. That is a strong statement. What makes you say that?
It's a strong statement, but I think it's an accurate statement. They want to change everything about what we do in higher education. They want to change what we're allowed to teach. They want to add levels of surveillance on faculty. They want to ban diversity. They want to list controversial issues while saying they're going to expand intellectual freedom and intellectual diversity. And so there's a number of contradictions, and there's a number of ways of approaching academia that have more to do with politics than what we actually do in the classroom and at the university.
Now, there's a lot in this bill, so it's hard to find a place to start. But let's start with how it could affect what's taught in the classroom. Mm-hmm. The bill spells out some controversial topics that universities cannot take an official position on, for or against. They can't take an official position on climate policies, electoral policies, or electoral politics, marriage, abortion. That's just a few cited in the bill. Do you expect that to have a trickle-down effect into the classroom if the university can't take a position?
Absolutely. And that distinction is interesting. You know, one is about banning universities from taking positions. I think in SB 83, they said, unless you're saying something in support of U.S. foreign policy. I don't know if they put that in SB 1 or not, but there are certain exceptions. So I think that that's one thing about what the university can do and can't do. And one can ask legitimate questions about when there's inequality in the world, when there's issues where places like universities should stand. Well, what about that, right? We also see discrepancies. So around Ukraine, you know, we saw the university taking a very clear position, you know, on Israel, Palestine, absolutely nothing. And so that's one question. But the second question is the trickle-down effect. Yes, I think there are other parts of the bill that directly don't want us to talk about certain things, except in ways that Republicans and the right wing want to talk about them. So I think there's a trickle-down effect, but I think there's also a direct targeting of faculty and programs who want to actually expand on what we talk about in the world and what we teach students.
In some testimony that I read, climate policy is a good example of this. So they're saying that if you're in a classroom and a debate comes up between students about climate policy, the bill wants you to let everyone have a voice about it.
Right.
And I guess that, you know, there's plenty of science about climate policy. And so they're saying that the professor can't tell a student they're wrong.
Well, there's some interesting nuances in the bill. And unfortunately, I've looked at it too closely, maybe. but I'm trying to make it clear for our radio audience. So on the one hand, there's a list of controversial topics which says pretty much be careful if you talk about those things, right?
Okay.
So there's that. On the other hand, there's this idea that we're indoctrinating students and we're not letting students speak. And what I said in my, so that was my own blog on Medium. What I said in my testimony was that actually they don't know what we're doing in the classroom. I would never ban a student from speaking their mind. I would never curtail their education because of their identity or because of their political positions. We already have that kind of expansive diversity in the classroom. I think what's happening here is, so first they act as if we're teaching classrooms, you know, full of indoctrination and it's just pontificating to students. That's not how we operate. That's not what we do. And I invited them to come to my class to see what we actually do. So that's one thing, the question of indoctrination. But the second thing, there's a part in the bill that says, we understand, you know, I'm speaking colloquially, we understand that intellectual diversity can be determined by specific fields. So they give us room as expert to say, well, this span of ideas is sufficient to say we have intellectual diversity. But then they say, unless we determine that that span was limited in order to prevent intellectual diversity. So it's a circle. Hmm. On the one hand, they say experts can determine. So for example, you know, should there be slavery? This is not a question we debate legitimately. It's not a legitimate position to say that there should be slavery. If someone said it in the classroom, they can say it, but we should be able to say that's actually a historically wrong to say you're for democracy and there should be slavery. Mm-hmm. Many things like that. Should women have the right to vote? That's not a debate we have anymore. It's a position in the world, but it doesn't make sense to have that kind of debate anymore. So they give us room to sort of say there are certain things we're not going to talk about because they don't fit our field. They don't fit the moment that we're in. But then they have that caveat as if the legislature will determine, and that's where the politics comes in. Mm-hmm. Right? Why should the legislature determine what's the scope of things that we're teaching in a classroom when we're coming at it with a great deal of knowledge and expertise, you know, and research?
Lawmakers are not going to send people into every classroom at every university at Ohio State to sit there and listen to every lecture. Right. So does the bill allow for like self-reporting? So yep. if a student reports to mm-hmm. some higher authority, mm-hmm. I felt that Senate Bill 1 was impacted here. Right. Is that what?
I think that's the kind of thing they're relying on. And that's true with the anti-trans bathroom bills as well. Mm-hmm. They're relying on people to report on other people and setting up surveillance mechanisms for that. And so that's maybe you're going to speak about this later, but that's mm-hmm. the post-tenure review part, for example. Mm-hmm. I know this idea that students, ordinary citizens, you know, whoever, you know, if they don't like something you teach, right, could report you as breaking those rules, and then possibly you get penalized or suspended or even fired.
Okay. So Senator Jerry Serino is the primary sponsor of the bill, and he said it will curb liberal bias and indoctrination, which you mentioned. 2 weeks ago, he took questions from reporters and answered critics who would say that the bill would destroy higher education. Here's what he had to say.
I would never participate in anything that destroyed higher ed. I realize I'm a huge fan of higher education. Ohio's economy in the future is dependent on higher education and all post-secondary, whether it's technical schools, et cetera. We have to provide the workforce and the training, the people that and people that are properly trained to take the jobs that our companies are going to demand, either companies that are already here or companies that want to come here. Mm-hmm. This is about enhancing higher education.
So what's your response to that?
Well, I think that, there's two things here. One is, of course, all of us think that higher education, one of its important functions is to get people jobs and prepare them for the workforce. We submit that knowledge about diversity and inclusion, experience with many different kinds of people, an ability to write critically, to think critically, to learn history, even its messy parts, right? To actually take on the complexity of the world. We think that that's essential for a better workforce. And so in that sense, if Senator Serino wants a better workforce, he actually should not go after diversity programs that actually look for merit in a much wider scale, among a much wider group of the population than was happening before those programs came into effect. If Senator Serino wants people to be better trained for the workforce, then there shouldn't be this sense that you should only teach pro-capitalist ideas. You should only teach, America is great kind of ideas. The ideas that we teach in the classroom that actually take on the complexity of those questions while preparing people for the workforce is essential. I think there's a second part I'll say quickly, which is that education is not only limited to getting a job and building the workforce. Education is also about expanding people's minds. Education is also about curiosity, about learning about things, just to develop, the arts, right? The humanities. These are the subjects that are most under attack under these kind of bills. They don't like particular parts of the university, and that's why they're gunning for them. Those aspects of life, actually, you know, the whole idea of a liberal arts education, which, by the way, comes out of the Western tradition, that whole idea of a liberal arts education is about not reducing universities just to the question of, you know, technical training, right? So again, jobs are absolutely important. We want our students to get jobs. You know, we want, you know, companies to come to Ohio and give them jobs, et cetera. But this kind of thing will drive people out of Ohio, and it won't prepare them for the 21st century workforce.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the higher education bill moving through the Ohio State House with Pranav Jani, president of the Ohio State chapter of the American Association of University Professors. He opposes the bill. Is Ohio State, where you teach, is it too left-leaning?
Ohio State is not too left-leaning, no. I mean, we had an 800-person, religious ceremony to start the year, presided over by football players. Ohio State is one of the most mainstream universities you'll find in the United States.
And it's, you know, Senator Serino says that he is trying to build the workforce that Ohio needs. So he's saying that the jobs that Ohio needs are maybe not what's being taught the most. Mm-hmm. That people are coming away with a large debt, a big debt from their education, and they can't find a job. Mm-hmm. So the part of this bill wants to tie graduation rates and the ability of someone who graduated to get a job in their field to the funding as well.
Right. They're using the funding to really manipulate what happens in the universities. That's another way to destroy it, to not think about what we need, but to use the funding to manipulate. Look, if they wanted students to come out of Ohio State without debt, then they should actually increase the amount of money they're giving to Ohio State. The last I checked, it's very small. You know, maybe it's in the 4% range, you know, of what they're actually giving to Ohio State. So they act like they control the whole university. And of course they do legally. But why not give to the university? There are many problems in education that we need to solve. You know, the student debt issue, the administrative bloat, you know, huge salaries, right, where faculty salaries stagnate, tuition goes up. There are things we need to solve. But I think what we're seeing is a politically motivated attack on particular diversity programs, on particular kinds of ideas that the Republicans don't like. And that's not what we need. That's not going to improve and better higher education.
Now, not just Ohio State University President Ted Carter, but all university presidents have been pretty quiet on mm-hmm. this bill. They haven't testified. They haven't been at any of the mm-hmm. protests or rallies, which makes it seem like they are in favor of the bill. But an article that I read, I believe it was in Signal Online, was saying that what they're doing is they are working behind the scenes to get more funding for the university rather than fight this bill. What do you have to say about that?
They need to actually decide where they stand. Are they going to defend our shared values of diversity or not? You can't gut the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, which was built by black students and faculty in the 1960s when they first, you know, through protests, through struggle, through the 1970 student strike. That's how we got black studies. That's how we got women's studies. That's how we got the Office of Minority Affairs, which became the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. The reason why, and I'll just correct you on one thing, we had over 1,000 there at the Speak Out the other day.
And then, okay, yeah. I'm not good at counting crowds.
No, yeah. I'm not either, but that's a number we're holding to. And we have over 1,000 testimonies at the State House, you know, the other day. And the reason why this groundswell is happening is because people are against what Carter and in University of Cincinnati, what the Ohio presidents, they're against this idea that we share your values, but behind the scenes we're working in your interests. So people actually reject that now. And that's why that rally was so big. And that was the main theme actually there, which was that Ted Carter actually doesn't have our back, right? Now, if he wants to show that he has our back, then he actually should reverse that position on the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, recognize, and the other programs, recognize the good that it's done, you know, for Ohio State students, and for our whole legacy, you know, not reject that entire history and that entire past that made us who we are. It's not just about football. You know, it's not just, we love football, but it's not just about football. Like, we actually have programs here that have been going on for decades and that have done so much good for so many people, including for white students. All the surveys of students show, including white students, saying that diversity has actually enhanced our education. So why they're going after that, you know, it's just a political thing. So with the president, the question you answered, they need to stand up. They need to not comply in advance and then tell us they're actually working in our own interests. You know, we understand that they have to go by the law. We understand that. But when you obey in advance, before the laws are even passed, you undercut our ability to actually say who we are, to actually stand up. You know, I would rather Ted Carter said, I wish he came to the Speak Out. And I wish he said, I'm with all of you, and then say to the legislature, yes, I'm hired by you and the Board of Trustees, but these are the people I represent, and they want something different. And then let's the laws pass, and if we have to obey them, let's obey them. But why comply in advance so people aren't buying that anymore?
Now, the bill does many things. You mentioned tenure earlier, where there would be more evaluations, mm-hmm. even for professors who have tenure, post-tenure reviews. Mm-hmm. But also, it bans faculty strikes.
Right.
That would have to be something that Ted Carter and other university presidents would be in favor. They don't want their right. faculty going on right. strike.
There's stuff that the Board of Trustees would like about this bill anyway. There's mm-hmm. stuff that they wouldn't like. Like the constraints it puts on the Board of Trustees, mm-hmm. right? That's also right. part of the bill. Yeah, of course, they don't want faculty strikes. But here's the thing. Most faculty don't want to go on strike either. Most faculty just want to teach our classes with the sort of freedom and autonomy that the American university has historically had. America's famous around the world for its universities not being interfered with by governmental overreach. This is governmental overreach. And so in terms of faculty strikes.
Well, here, before you yeah. answer that question, let's listen to Senator Serino talked about the strike ban.
Sure.
And because a similar bill did not pass last legislative
right.
session, and it was related to this strike ban provision, but he said no.
This is not an anti-union bill. It is not union busting, as some have said. As recently as last night. I'm fine with labor unions, and I've dealt with in my private sector past with labor unions like the steel workers in Buffalo, New York, which is a very tough union. We managed to coexist and get along, and they have rights to organize and be represented. But what they don't have a right to do is to step in front of a contract that exists between the student and the institution.
So, is he union busting with this bill?
It's absolutely union busting. I wish he would try and tell those Buffalo steel workers that you have the right to organize, but you don't have the right to strike. Mm. So what I was saying was no one, not faculty nor any other worker, wants to go on strike. That means you lose a paycheck. That means you put your family under hardship. It's not an easy thing, and it's not a romantic thing. People have the right, however, to withhold their labor, which is producing all of this wealth, which is running everything. This is a historic right that people have to say our labor, our work is what's running everything, and we have the right, and we might withhold it if we don't get a fair contract. And it's only when workers feel there's an unfairness, then they use the strike. So banning the strike is union busting because it takes away, and Jerry Serino knows this very well, it takes away the biggest leverage that workers have. So in the first issue, of the first version of SB 83, he actually banned all strikes on universities. Mm. That was the early version. There's been so many versions.
Right.
The labor unions came out against it. We Are Ohio Coalition, right? 75, 80 labor unions. And then he tried to divide and conquer. And he said only faculty can't go on strike. The rest can. Mm. Right? Again, recognizing. And in this climate, where we have a vice president who says professors are the enemy, in this climate, labor unions said, don't just target faculty either. We won't let you simply say only faculty can't go on strike. We're going to stand up for them too. And they said, we're still against SB 83, and they've come out against SB 81. So I just want to underline that's a pretty historic moment. for labor. Labor recognizes this as anti-union, and they know what they're talking about.
All right. Well, we are running out of time, okay. So this bill has a lot in it
does.
And I'm going to have to just. Very quickly, there's a syllabus requirement to put your syllabus online.
Right.
Is it required right now that it has to be on just students see the syllabus? I mean, syllabi are online, right?
Yeah. Many of these things are redundant. That's the other thing. Many are wrong and many are just redundant. We already go through post-tenure review. I'm tenured. I've just turned in my activity report. We already go through many hoops. We already turn in our syllabi. But the distinction is they want to set up a surveillance system.
Mm-hmm.
So the syllabus has to be set up so you can get to it, you know, within three clicks, right? And so that's about surveillance. That's about having more eyes on faculty with the fundamental idea that we're indoctrinating. What I wanted to throw in, since we're running out of time, is the way that it's just the sheer contradictions. You know, in the bill, it actually requires, I think it's a kind of tokenism, where they create a civics course and they say, you have to read A Letter from a Birmingham Jail by Martin Luther King. But I don't think they've actually read A Letter from a Birmingham Jail. If they read it, they would see that he actually stands for a lot of the things that those students in the Black Student Union stood for in the 1960s when they created things like the Office of Diversity and Inclusion through their struggle. A lot of the things that King talks about speaking truth to power, about actually speaking up against unjust laws, you know, that's the opposite of what Cereno stands for, what this bill stands for, and unfortunately, what our university administration stands for at this point.
I want to say thank you, Pranav Jani, president of the Ohio State chapter of the American Association of University Professors. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Amy.
Coming up, we're going to talk to students throughout Ohio State who are making their voices heard, and we're going to talk with one of them. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about a controversial higher education bill that recently passed the Ohio Senate and is now in the House, where hearings are being held. Republican lawmakers appear to have enough votes to pass it, although a similar bill from the last legislative session did fail to pass. Hundreds have protested the legislation on college campuses around the state. More than 800 submitted testimony in opposition, making it one of the most contentious pieces of legislation in recent memory. And students are spearheading many of the protests. Joining us now is Nika Delgado, a senior anthropology major at Kent State University. She's also the vice president of Kent State's chapter of the Ohio Student Association. It's a statewide grassroots organization with student-led chapters. Welcome to All Sides, Nika.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. You're asking that because you're at the State House right now getting ready to testify in opposition of the bill. What led you to oppose this bill?
The simple fact that I'm a student in Ohio and they are trying to take away resources from students like myself and people in my family.
So which part of the bill are you going to, because your testimony, I'm sure it has to be just a few minutes. What part are you zeroing in on? Because this is a large bill with a lot of different pieces and parts, and it does a lot of different things.
Yeah, I am zeroing in on the kind of controversial concepts topic. As an anthropology student, there's a lot of stuff in there that like would specifically affect my education, climate policies, foreign policy, electoral policy, marriage and abortion, all that is listed. And then like also woke is listed in quotes on there. Which I mean, you know, really anything controversial could be woke, I guess, to Jerry Cereno.
So you're saying, so the bill says that universities cannot take positions on those things, climate policy,
yes,
abortion, marriage, universities can't take positions. Are you thinking it's going to trickle down into your classrooms?
Oh, absolutely. I already have professors going through their slideshows and changing the things that are in it just in case this passes because they're so afraid for their jobs.
They're afraid that they're going to lose their jobs if they teach something that the state deems controversial?
Yes.
So what are you hearing from other students? Have you talked to any students who are in favor of the bill?
No. As far as I'm aware, the only student in Ohio that's in favor of this bill is one guy from a private university who's employed by Turning Point USA.
Okay. So, are there any provisions in the bill that you do agree with? There's one idea in there that some majors can be finished in 3 years instead of four, because that would lessen debt. Is that something you could get behind?
I intend to, like, once I get into grad school, take a three-year program. I think that there are some benefits to having three-year programs, but I think the way that four-year programs are structured now is to the benefit of most students, because they have more time to get their work done and to get it done well.
There's also a provision in the bill where if there's a degree program that doesn't have, I think the number is 5 students who graduate with that degree over the course of 3 years, the degree would be eliminated. Could you get behind something like that?
I wouldn't say that our anthropology department is small, but from a not super popular degree, that is something that concerns me a little bit, just because I already know that there are some talks about, like, sunsetting the anthropology department at Kent State, but those are rumors, but I'm still very nervous about that in the future.
We're talking about higher education and a higher education overhaul bill moving through the State House. With us now is Nika Delgado, a senior anthropology major at Kent State University. So you mentioned majoring in anthropology. You have a minor in literature and culture. I would think that this, your degrees, the professor who I had on the first segment mentioned that there are certain degree programs that feel more attacked than others. Is that what you would say about your degree program?
Absolutely. When you're studying the human condition and what makes people human, bills like this are a direct attack on what we study and what we do and research.
Now, Senator Serino would say that his goal with this bill is to make higher education get more people into the Ohio workforce in programs that Ohio needs. So his goal is to get more people career ready, job ready than what universities are doing now. Do you feel like as an anthropology major, you're going to be career ready?
Oh, absolutely. Kent State University just launched a careers in anthropology course that's currently being taught by, you know, some of my favorite professors at the university, and they do such wonderful work and research in their communities. So I think what Kent State is doing now is already preparing me for my career in anthropology. And if I was able to continue going to grad school in Ohio, that would continue to be cultivated at Kent State and in Ohio. So,
are you saying you might not go to grad school in Ohio because of this bill?
Oh, absolutely. It's very, very scary. I have delayed applying to grad school. The application is coming up, and I'm very, very nervous to submit my application because of this bill.
Now, what kind of career do you want? What is your goal with your anthropology degree?
I would love to have a career in library and information sciences or museums, which is kind of under attack across the nation right now. So I'm just very nervous about that in general.
So Senator Serino says he doesn't make personal judgments on how many people come to testify. He believes a vast majority of people testifying in opposition are from Ohio State because it's conveniently located near the State House. Let's listen to what he had to say.
I didn't hear anything really new during the course of 7.5 or 8 hours yesterday. So the sheer numbers are irrelevant. It's about policy and what is the best policy for us to pursue.
So what would you say in reaction to that comment?
I think it's disgusting that he doesn't listen to the people that he's supposed to be representing. And I think that if he truly cared about the well-being of Ohioans, he would listen to the nearly 1,000 people that showed up in opposition of this bill and the immense number of people that are in the House today.
Now, tell me about today, because our listeners can't see that you are wearing a flower in your hair and you have a Hawaiian shirt on. Tell me why.
Yeah, absolutely. So we put together it's ridiculous that they're having this over spring break and they know that students are going out of town and they're going on vacation. So we figured we would just have vacation at the State House. And we would come and turn up for spring break. We have a ton of students here just in vacation outfits. We've got our sandals on, you know, we're relaxing, sunglasses and everything.
Do you feel like so another thing that this bill does is it would count student evaluations of instructors as a part of the faculty evaluations. Do you think that's a good move? I mean, I think that, you know, students fill out these evaluations at the end of every semester, and it would be nice to know people read them and, like, take action on them.
I do those, like, reviews of courses every single semester for every one of my professors, and they read each one individually. And I have had classes with professors who make note of the things that they change and they tell you the things that they change in their classes. So I think that that's already happening. And I think by allowing students to like submit like complaints or like get the professors in trouble for like the things that they're doing in their classroom, I think is like asinine and petty almost. Because this is stuff that we already do, and we already tell them the things that we like and don't like in their classrooms and what we wish they spent more or less time on every semester, at least at Kent State University. I don't know about other places, but
now go ahead.
Oh no, I'm sorry. No,
the decision to end diversity, equity, and inclusion programs is a controversial one. There's a tendency to equate these programs with racial diversity only, but these programs are more diverse than that. Can you give us an idea of what you think diversity means at Kent State?
At Kent State University does make a point to say like their DEI is racial and ethnic minority based and also like LGBTQIA based, but we have a ton of amazing resources for our disabled students, our veteran students, our students who are parents, our women in STEM. We have one of the best nursing programs in Northeast Ohio, our like biological sciences, our environmental sciences women. The DEI isn't just like Black people. It's not just Latino people. It's not like, it's not that. It's intersectional, and it is truly everybody.
Well, I want to say thank you, and good luck with your testimony today. Thank you to Nika Delgado, a senior anthropology major at Kent State University, who's testifying against the higher education bill at the State House today. Thanks for being here, Nika.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up, we're going to talk with a proponent of the bill on why this is good for higher education. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about a controversial higher education bill that recently passed the Ohio Senate and is now in the House, where hearings are being held. Republican lawmakers appear to have enough votes to pass it, although a similar bill in the last legislative session did fail to pass. Hundreds have protested the legislation on college campuses and around the state, and more than 800 submitted testimony in opposition, making it one of the most contentious pieces of legislation in recent memory. The bill has its backers. The Buckeye Institute is one of them. Greg Lawson is a research fellow at the conservative think tank, and he joins us now. Welcome back to All Sides, Greg.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
So one of the features that the Buckeye Institute likes about Senate Bill 1, which is now in the House, is the accountability it will require for colleges and universities. What do you mean by accountability?
Well, I think the first thing is we need to recalibrate what we're doing in higher education in Ohio. I think you were talking with one of the earlier guests and talking about, well, what are we going to do to make sure that students can get in, get out, get the kind of education they need, the credentialing or degrees that they need so that they can enter the workforce and can do so with limited amounts of debt. So we need to make sure that universities are accountable in accomplishing exactly that, because when you think about taxpayer-funded, especially the public institutions that are getting subsidies, we get over $2 billion of subsidies in taxpayer subsidies to our four-year public education universities. We need a return on that investment. And I think that accountability is making sure that we're able to stay laser focused on the things that are going to make sure that students are ready to enter the workforce, making Ohio a more competitive state overall, which is a general problem that the state has had over several decades.
Now, I don't have the budget in front of me. I don't have all funding memorized, but the professor we had in the first segment said that funding at the state level is 4% of Ohio State's budget. I don't know if that's true, but that doesn't seem like a very large number.
Well, Ohio State also has, obviously, it's got its endowment. It's got a lot of tuition that comes in. It does get a lot of research money there that kind of flows through because it is a research university. So I'm not sure if that's the exact percentage, but I wouldn't necessarily dispute that. But, I mean, the state, there is a state portion. Everybody, all the universities want to get it. It's called the state share of instruction.
Yeah.
And it's over $2 billion. It goes to all of them. And so that is a significant investment. You know, it's one of the larger items in the state budget. It's not the largest, but it's significant. And there are discussions that maybe we should be putting more in overall. And I think there's some merit to that. But if we're going to do something along those lines, again, we want to make sure that we're getting a return on the investment. So when we put some of the guardrails and the various things that are really involved in this piece of legislation, it's really directing universities to get into the 21st century and to recognize that Ohio, frankly, is a little behind the curve when it talks about getting people ready for the jobs of the future. In some sense, even the jobs of right now. So we need to really focus in on that. And I think sometimes we get distracted by a lot of stuff. Obviously, this bill's had a lot of, lot of people coming out. There's a lot of politicization and discussions. But at the end of the day, what I think everybody should agree on is, are we going to get people into our universities, getting the skills that they need so that they can be productive, happy citizens who can build families and stay right here in Ohio? That's what we should be doing. That's what higher education policy should be focused on. And I think for the most part, Senate Bill 1 does a very good job of returning us to those basics.
We heard from Republican Representative Tom Young. He chairs the House Workforce and Higher Education Committee. He was unable to join us for today's show because the hearing on the bill was scheduled for today. Opponents are testifying today. Proponents are scheduled to testify sometime next week. But he said he fully expects it to pass, and he cites the tremendous amount of work being done on the bill. It's had various forms over several years. But he also is pushing, he wants to make college more affordable. And Representative Young says he wants to make sure schools can meet future workforce demands, which is what you just mentioned. Now, I would say to that the anthropology major that we just had on in the last segment, she said that her degree and liberal arts degrees like hers are what feel attacked. Do you feel there's still room for liberal arts degrees?
Well, I think yes. I think there is something that we need to think about in terms of when we're talking about public, again, subsidies. And I keep coming back to this because when we talk about those dollars, those are the taxpayer portions. Now, if individuals want to do other things or do, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that folks can do. And we should certainly not do anything that would prevent somebody from being able to enter into a field that they like. But there's a difference between when the public is putting taxpayer money that we all put into the pot, so to speak. We need to make sure that we're getting those high-end return on investments for those kind of public investments that are being made. If you have something that maybe isn't going to be quite as you know, STEM-oriented, which is obviously a very hot thing with a lot of the technology jobs that are becoming the future, or nursing and teaching where we have some deficits in terms of the number of people in those fields, those are things we know we need. Those are things that it makes sense for the state to really put a lot of effort into. Some of these other things, I don't want to say that they don't matter. Of course they matter, but there is a question whether the public should be subsidizing that, or if that's something where an individual has to make some decisions about what they're going to do and out of their private resources or getting loans, or there's a lot of creativity that we could talk about in terms of how you can sequence or fund some of those things. But I think we need to focus again on what is going to get people jobs, good paying jobs that obviously redound back into the state economy. And I think, again, that is what this legislation is moving towards.
Do you have a 4-year degree?
Mm-hmm.
And what was your major?
Actually, I was it's kind of nerdy. It's a communications major with a focus on the Federal Communications Commission regulation policy.
Oh, well, then you're here, right here in radio.
I thought I was going to be in television, actually, at one point in time. And so I ended up doing public policy instead.
Do you feel like your 4 years was wasted? Did you get a well-rounded education? Because communication falls under liberal arts in a lot of schools.
Well, I will say this. I think some of my favorite classes that I took were classes that weren't even in my major, and I appreciated those. Do I think that those have all directly impacted me? Not in the same way that some jobs that have very technical specifics would need. So I'd say that it was good. It was useful. Do I think I could have done it in 3 years and still been just as well off and basically picked up a lot of the skill sets that I've acquired since I've entered into the workforce? I think I probably could have. So I think that's another reason why we're talking about the 3-year degrees, another component of this legislation. I know there's discussions in the state operating budget, which is being debated at the same time as this legislation. There's a lot of higher education related activity and policy in that legislation as well. And I think I could have done it there, probably could have saved a little bit of money. And I don't don't necessarily think I would have been worse off. But yeah, I loved it. I went to Ohio State, so I'm a big, big fan of the Buckeyes and everything else. So I really appreciate what Ohio State does and the importance that it has for our community and all. But again, I look at the overall numbers of Ohio. I look at the economy. I look at the jobs. I look at the demographic trends of this state. And I can tell you that on many, many ways, we are not going in the right direction. And I think part of it is because we don't have policy that has been nearly as laser focused as it should be. We've been talking about this for years at the Buckeye Institute. I frankly am very glad that we have folks like Senator Serino and Representative Young who are taking this very seriously and are really trying to take a laser focus on this, because I think we've frankly missed the boat for a while.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a bill that would make many changes to higher education with Greg Lawson, a research fellow at the conservative think tank, the Buckeye Institute. Now, you just mentioned a laser focus. This bill is huge. It has lots of different provisions. I mean, I had a quote in here from Senator Serino saying that his top 12 priorities, and I was like, top 12 is, I can't even talk about the top 12. I can't fit it into an hour on the radio. So how is that laser focused?
Well, I think if you think about laser focus in the sense of what are all these policies doing to achieve the overall objective? And if the objective is what we were talking about before with the return on investment, getting students the skills that they need to get into the workforce, I think that's what all of these do. Whether you're talking about the tenure section, whether you're talking about refocusing administration, some of the DEI stuff, there is a lot of money that's spent there that we would argue is probably not going directly into the classroom to be the direct benefit of students in that way. The three-year degree portion, all of those things, while they are big in the sense that there's multiple pieces to the piece of legislation, I would argue that they all are trying to move in the same general direction, and that the overall laser focus is what are the outcomes. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, all of those policies are effectively inputs into a goal of what we're going to achieve, which is students who can get jobs, the jobs of today, the jobs of tomorrow, make good money and do so without having crushing debt that has all kinds of downstream negative effects.
Now, Democratic lawmaker Senator Casey Weinstein wrote in opposition to the bill. He is saying that it's going to have a detrimental effect on business and the ability to hire a diverse and skilled workforce. Do you feel like universities are going to not have as diverse of a workforce after this bill?
I know that's a talking point that's out there. I disagree with it. I think that we have really focused, and we had, we talked a little bit about diversity in a previous show. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we have a somewhat truncated vision of what diversity really is. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in this legislation that prevents people from being able to pull in folks from all walks of life. It's really just saying, hey, you can't have race, in particular race and specific things like that, be the main driving force or essentially leading into things like quotas and things like that. Stuff that the U.S. Supreme Court has now made rulings on relative to things like affirmative action. But nothing says you can't go to rural Ohio and pull students in from Appalachia or from an inner city area and do it, which obviously very different cultures, very different situations and life experiences that those individuals have. But we can bring those folks in, and that actually is diversity. But it's not necessarily diversity in a sense of it being the, and I think it has been somewhat politicized, and we can argue about who's done more politicization. Mm-hmm. I'd say both sides have politicized this issue pretty strongly, actually. But that's what diversity is, and I think it's about trying to put people together, make us a holistic society where we can plug in the gaps that different people have, because we all have those different experiences. And there's nothing in this legislation that would preclude that. There's nothing in this legislation. In fact, it's very specific about talking about we should be able to talk about a wide range of different subjects and controversial issues, mm-hmm. too. It just says you can't literally do nothing but say one perspective or mandate that this is the only correct perspective. It's saying there has to be a diversity. And again, we talk about the word diversity, a diversity of thought, a diversity of options that are put there. And I think Senator Serino in particular has spoken pretty eloquently on that particular point. So I think, honestly, a lot of this is hyperventilation and hyperbole because people don't like change. But I can tell you this, if Ohio doesn't, and it's not just in higher ed, there's a lot of stuff we need to do better in Ohio. But Ohio is not in the best place in terms of being able to compete with other states, much less compete globally. Higher education is at the fulcrum of being able to make us competitive. So we need to make sure that we're doing everything that we can. And that laser focus, again, is the purpose. The laser focus is the outcome. And if we are fiddling around with a lot of other things, we're a little bit like Nero fiddling while Rome burns.
Mm. Now, for the diversity component, the diversity of thought that you mentioned, But can a professor stop a student if a student stands up in the class and you have to let every voice be heard? But the student says, I believe that women should not have the right to vote and we should have slavery. I mean, you know, the diversity of thought, every thought. There's a part to education where you have to educate the student.
Sure. And I think we can come up with hypothetical situations where something kind of absurd happens. And could it happen? Sure. Something like that could happen. And I think most of those people would be probably shouted down and by their own classmates and said, hey, you know, sit down, don't do that. And especially if we're doing it in a social media-esque sort of way that's
but if that student who gets shouted down then reports the professor, in their tenure review, that could be detrimental.
Well, but on the other hand, and again, I think it's important to note that that's one element of the review. It's not the only element of the review. It's an important element, and I think, you know, we can debate about what the right percentage of it should be, but it's certainly not the only piece of it. But are there concerns? I can understand why people might be a little concerned about it, but I think that we're trying to construct scenarios where it's probably unlikely, and it depends on how you do it, too. If you shout somebody down and say, hey, you're stupid, and you shouldn't be saying something like that, and you're an evil, malevolent person, that's one way of trying to have it. The other way of trying to do it is to have a dialogue, even if it might be difficult and some people might be offended by it, but having a straightforward, rational conversation. I think there's multiple ways of being able to have an engagement if somebody says that. And I think all this thing is saying is you can't literally just shut something down and say, no, you're wrong, you're bad. And I think that's unfortunately, we have heard stories and there have been plenty of anecdotes where things of that nature have happened. Is it as pervasive as some people say? We can all have debates about it because everybody's going to throw out their own anecdotes on it. But at the end of the day, there's nothing that prevents people from being able to discuss things. It's simply saying you can't mandate that this one perspective is the only perspective, and you can still open it up to have conversation and dialogue that's respectful of everybody.
Now, there's worries that the elimination of diversity, equity, and inclusion is going to hurt students that have disabilities, maybe veterans get certain scholarships. They're worried that some of these scholarships will just go away and it will eliminate true diversity on campus.
Again, I would say I think that we have sort of misinterpreted sort of what diversity really means. No, to my knowledge, and I've talked to legislators about this, including Senator Serena, Representative Young, and other supporters at the State House. Nobody, to my knowledge, is saying we want to only have certain kinds of folks coming in. We want to make these universities as broad-based and as open as possible, again, to get people those skills so that they can have the right kind of jobs in the future and that we can spend appropriately, not have money being spent on extraneous things or overburdensome administrative costs. Nobody is saying we don't want people to have a diversity of experience coming in. I can't say that somebody, some functionary somewhere in the government or some functionary at some university might not interpret something in a certain way and do something. Certainly that's always a possibility, but that is not the intent behind the legislation. And I don't think that that's ever been articulated as such by anybody. And I would disagree very vehemently if somebody was saying, no, this is all about trying to just shut everything down. What it is saying that we are using this as a means to an end. Diversity is a means to the end of trying to build out a prosperous society for everybody. And I think, again, sometimes we've gotten a little lost and that phrase has become an end unto itself. And those are two very different things.
We have 1 minute left and I'm going to have to ask you to answer this in 1 minute. But the ban on faculty strikes, having one union not be able to strike, but other unions can strike. This is what made the bill not pass the last time, was a part of the faculty strikes. But it's still in there.
Sure. And we're supportive of it. I've testified in that favor. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that you've heard the argument is, while it has not happened a lot, the issue is if you have a strike in the middle of a year where you've got a combination of tax dollars that have gone in and people have paid money through tuition, and all of a sudden things just stop, there's something that's pretty inherently unfair to the students if that happens. And I know there's a lot of, and by the way, this puts faculty under the same statute, I believe, as police and fire and health professionals. Mm-hmm. There's still arbitration. There's still mechanisms in place. This isn't like we're throwing faculty into the jaws of a careless management. There's still mechanisms in place for fact-finding and information to be put out there. So I think it's we need to be a little careful about how, this is being painted as this horrible draconian thing, and it's really not. There's still mechanisms in place, but it's really about trying to protect the students. And at the end of the day, none of the faculty would have jobs if it wasn't for the students. And it wasn't for the outcomes, again, that we are seeking to have. And that's why they should be put front and center.
We're going to have to leave it there. All right. Thank you to Greg Lawson, research fellow at the conservative think tank, the Buckeye Institute. Mixed up all my words there. Thank you, Greg. And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us.